So hello and welcome to the Sustainability Report podcast, where all we talk is climate, environment and sport. My name is Matt Campelli, and today for our 92nd edition of the podcast, I'm sitting here with two legends of the game, Claire Paul, founder and CEO of the Sport Positive Summit. Hiya, Claire.
Hello.
And Jess Murphy, a sport ecologist and assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati. Hello, Jess. Nice to see you again.
Hello.
Now, today, we're going to be looking ahead to the hotly anticipated Sport Positive Summit 2023, which I'm very, very excited about. Claire, I've got my suitcase packed. I've got my passport in hand, ready to see some friends. Just before we kick off, we're like digging into it a bit deeper. You know, what can we expect from the summit this year? What's a little bit different from last year? What are the kind of key things we can expect to see if we come to the event?
Well, I'm very, very excited about the visual of you with your little passport and suitcase ready to go out the door. No, we're super excited about the summit this year. I think I'll be able to bang on for ages now, Matt, about all the different things that we're doing and the topics and the speakers.
Bang on as you wish.
But I think the main sort of macro output for us this year is to really show how this industry is evolving and how it's growing. So in terms of the way we've broken down the event sort of more logistically is to allow more time for streamed content to get into more discussions. As always, everything's live streamed, recorded and available for 3 months afterwards. So while there'll be stuff going on in two different places at once, it enables us to get into more topics in depth and have discussions and ask questions, but then also have everything available afterwards. So, you know, the audience don't have to miss anything. They'll just watch it back afterwards. But that ability for us to delve into more topics has been really helpful, especially with how I think we've probably all seen the industry evolve over the last few years, but certainly in the past 12 months around more commercial aspects. So sponsorship, risk management, contractual obligations, things like that, as well as breaking down some of the issues more into where our audience come from. So we all know that there isn't necessarily just one sustainability manager person within every sport organization that are cut from the same cloth. Some come from HR, legal, commercial, communications, facilities. So again, we've tried to put the agenda together to reflect that. The first day, looking at more of the macro trends and the stuff that everyone really needs to be across and know, which Jess is obviously leading a session on that side. So these kind of bigger issues, and then also at the same time, more action driven, more specific operational stuff like circular economy or transport, biodiversity, etc. So the ability to think big, but also get into the detail on the first day. And then on the second day, to have what this more commercial themed focus for those who are perhaps more on from legal, from sponsorship, from procurement, that side of the business. And then on the other stream, our Inspire stream, which is more for your communications and sort of sustainability managers that are across everything, thinking about athletes, thinking about how we communicate, thinking about training and education, how we're connecting with fans outside the event. So we've got these streams, and then also we've got these bigger keynote plenaries around the broad influence of sport from a global perspective, and also sort of for the first time as well, the annual debate, which hopefully will enable the audience to hear from some thought leaders, but also anonymously input into some of the biggest challenges that we're facing. How do we continue to grow sport whilst being sustainable? And also the fossil fuel sort of heavy carbon sponsorship debate that seems to be a big piece of interest, both from media, from fans, and also we've started to see a lot of these sponsorship guides come up in terms of how to decide how to work with sponsors. So loads and loads and loads to dig into this year.
So, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the debates and some of those other key talking points. You talked a bit about the evolution of the industry in the past 12 months. You talked a little bit about the commercial side. You know, from your point of view as organizer of the Sport Positive Summit, you know, what else have you seen evolve over the past year? Where else do you feel it might differ this year from last year? What do you think are kind of the key things that people talk about this year that we didn't necessarily talk about last year?
I think for sure we've seen, because of the rise of extreme weather events impacting sport, I think the discussion around risk and risk management has come to the fore more. I think it was still in the conversation last year, but I do feel as though that's come to the fore more this year. And the same on the sponsorship side, as I mentioned, the more commercial focus. I think that's also indicative of the industry as a whole. people outside of just a sustainability role being interested in this stuff. I think, again, probably driven by a lot of the media coverage that we've had around sports events being cancelled or impacted, like Formula One, or like events in New York being impacted by Canadian wildfire smoke. We've seen a lot of media coverage around that, as well as things like the Qatar World Cup and the finding against their carbon neutrality claims by the Swiss regulator there. We've seen a lot of new coverage and new media angles to this discussion. And I think that's why it's pushing more people outside of just the head of sustainability or head of CSR being interested in this. We're looking, you know, more people coming from comms, more people coming from legal, more people coming from different parts of sports organizations, and more group bookings as well, which I think is really indicative that people, sports organizations are seeing it more broadly as everyone's responsibility, more so than just one person who's been leading on sustainability to come to an event like this and report back.
What's your view, Jess, on that? Claire talked a bit about more focus on the actual risks to sport, more people from across organisations who are interested in it, not just one or two people as there's been traditional, more focus on commercial. You know, what do you see as been the kind of key evolution points on this topic, say, since last year's summit, when obviously you there speaking as well?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more that risk has moved into the forefront of these conversations. From my end, I see that happening because the hazards are moving closer to our frontal lobes, closer to our lived everyday experiences, that we are at the point in sort of a menu of points in the climate crisis that resources, access, wealth, all of those things, the cushions of years past and decades past are starting to wear thin for lots of people, lots of organizations, and lots of parts of the world that had sort of a sense of isolation from the realities of climate change and of global warming over the decades of inactivity in the modern era. So now, some of the wealthiest people in the wealthiest countries, the wealthiest corporations are feeling the realities of the climate hazards, which is why we're seeing risk management step into the forefront. And that's something that I've been actually reading this morning. Here's my risk management book. I've been spending a lot of time in this because so much of my sort of the start to my academic work has been birthed out of risk management, because that's something in sport that we have to circumnavigate at every level. It's not exclusive to elite, professional, high level, highly visible, and well-funded sport organizations. But risk management and emergency action plans trickle all the way down to youth, grassroots, and community level sport. And the scale of vulnerability fluctuates in between, and that capacity that organizations and people have to recover from the events that we're seeing become increasingly catastrophic year after year, it takes a toll on people, and people's willingness and ability to financially, physically, and emotionally recover from these very devastating events is only challenging our ability to fight the climate crisis further. And so that's kind of where the work that we laid the groundwork for last year in climate justice can return again this year, which I'm really excited about because it puts people in the center. And so Claire's absolutely right that the media focus on environmental issues, on sport, has really grown in the past 12 months. And the focus that I've seen, or at least the focus that I've been paying attention to, has been on the people rather than on the organizations, because at the end of the day, it's humans that are ending up hospitalized or collapsing or overheated and overworked and underpaid and all of these other things that really illustrate the threat multiplying effect of the climate crisis. So it's great now that we're living in societies that are shining spotlights on these issues. My hope now for the next 12 months is that we can sort of centralize people into these efforts with a little more caution and care and in less disposable ways than maybe we've done in the past.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that segues nicely into the talk, I guess you'll be giving next week at the summit. Last year, you talked about climate justice. This year, environmental justice, so very much around the justice topic. But you mentioned earlier on about the fact that now we're seeing more developed, richer nations, leagues, potentially, being impacted by this. And when we speak about justice, traditionally, it's been about the haves and have-nots, like the countries that are not polluting, but the countries that are being affected versus the countries that are polluting, but not being as negatively affected. Now that balance is becoming more balanced, how does that change our approach to environmental justice and climate justice? Because there's a slightly different paradigm there, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. There will always be that separation between have and have-nots in the society that we currently live in as it's built. As long as we uphold it, it will continue to exist. But there are ways that we can chip away at those injustices. And they're already happening in sport across the globe, which is exciting to see, these tireless efforts for equity and inclusion when it comes to environmental issues. But so much of the focus on climate action and environmental sustainability have been on managerial responses, managerial decision-making that, again, put business in the center. And that's not always appropriate when it comes to issues of climate change, because what's at the center of the climate crisis is and will continue to be humans, animals, and plants that need a livable planet. And that, like, that's the very simple truth. I say very simple. Peel the layers back and it's very complicated. But at a very simple level, it's humans, plants, and animals, or really plants and animals on Earth. That's the center, because the environment will continue to have these responses to the decisions that humans are making on the planet. If we simply focus on managerial responses, we're not getting back to the core issue that started the whole thing. So in thinking about justice-based efforts, like I said, putting people back at the heart of it, sometimes it requires those who are most vulnerable, most susceptible, most at disadvantage to contribute to those solutions. And I believe that it is the onus of the sports sector, of the business sector, to empower those community groups, those people, not overburden them, but include them in the decision-making, make them a central part of the voice that's heard, that drives the change. Otherwise, we end up in a very cyclical hamster wheel that we've kind of been in for so long. So what would be really cool, and what I sort of hope to do next week at our session, is to reiterate the urgency of climate action in tandem with the urgency for climate justice, because issues of climate and environmental injustice have extremely devastating outcomes in human health and in biodiversity and in nature health and well-being. And these are all the things that we need to be at top tier in order to continue to fight the climate crisis as a whole.
Humans, plants, animals, Claire, that should be the strap line for next year.
Sure. That's it.
I just wanted to, just to sort of build a little bit on what Jess has said there. This is such a crucial topic to everything going forward in what we're doing. And I think because we've seated it in the sort of macro theme, because everybody needs to be thinking about this. And, you know, just to build on what Jess has said, if we're going to innovate, if we're going to evolve, if we're going to make things better in sport going forward, we need different perspectives at the table. We need people with different experiences, people with different background, people that come from different places than those who are at a top level within sport right now, because we know, however it looks in the future, it can't look like it does right now in terms of the climate crisis. So in terms of that, that's why this, you know, Jess's brilliant work, and building on the work from last year as well, I must underline that Alex and Jess's session was one of the highest rated at the summit last year in terms of people's feedback, because it's one of these foundational topics that you build everything else off, right? You know, we have got that really specific stuff that's topic driven, but this, we have to get past things like implicit bias and others to be able to make sure we are moving forward and evolving in the right way and in a more just way. And I think more broadly, if you're more across the environmental and climate sector, more broadly outside of sport, you've probably heard about Just Transition, you know, so frequently around that. And it's part of that as well, in terms of we have to be better going forward. And also we're not going to innovate the way we need to if we don't have those various perspectives at the table and there's barriers in place that we need to get past. So it is a session I know is going to be incredibly popular at the summit again this year, following the success of last year's.
Well, I'm really glad you mentioned diverse perspectives, because you mentioned right at the very beginning that one of the things that's going to be incorporated into the summit this year is going to be a debate, which I think is going to be closing off the second day of the summit, which I'm really looking forward to, because it'll be interesting to see those different perspectives and how much of a debate and how much kind of friction we get on particular topics. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what the makeup of the debate will be and you know, what we kind of expect from that? What kind of perspectives you feel to come out, and if you feel there will be some friction on some topics?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something I've wanted to do for a few years, to be honest, but where the industry was, getting people to actually speak around some of these topics is not always as easy.
Because not the easiest.
You have to put your head above the parapet and speak out. So I think the speakers that we've got come from different backgrounds and different lived experiences and have different perspectives. Broadly, I should say they're all, you know, from within the UK, but that's more of a proximity issue as well, in terms of making sure we can get the people in the room. So there's myself and David Garrido from Sky Sports who will co-facilitate, and David taking more of the presenting role, but I'm going to be supporting, because a key part of this debate is going to be posing questions and polls to everyone in the audience to come back anonymously. So we'll have David Goldblatt, who's a sports writer, broadcaster, journalist, author, and who's very outspoken about the role sport can play in terms of tackling the climate crisis. Martin Afaya, who obviously is a legend of the rugby game, Chariots of Fire, Martin Fire MBE, I should say, who's coming to give the athlete's perspective around this. And Martin's actually quite a big proponent of electric vehicles, and he does work in this space as well. And then Fee Morgan from SailGP, who, if people know Fee, SailGP obviously are doing incredible work. Fee's got a long and experienced background in this and is very happy to share her opinion on things as well. So we've got great perspectives that are going to drive the onstage debate around these themes of growth of sport. Can you continue to grow your sport, whether it be in terms of the number of tournaments, the number of locations, the number of participants, etc., whilst being sustainable? If you've committed to net zero, how do you then grow within that, which is an important broader topic that we need to tackle. And also the sort of fossil fuels or heavy carbon sponsorship in sport. I would say, you know, in terms of these topics, we've got people on stage who are going to be leading the discussion and sharing their views. But as I said, the kind of audience, both in the room and online, their participation is going to be key, because through polls and through Slido, which we'll use for Q&A and people to share their thoughts, I'm going to be sort of moderating the feedback from the audience. It's going to be anonymous. People can write down what they think. They can feel free to say, you know, what they've said on stage is fine, but, you know, where are we going to get the money from then if we don't take them here? And, you know, the stuff that everyone's thinking, but they don't feel as though they can stand on stage perhaps and put that quote next to their rights holder organisation, which is the reality of the business of sport. So I think it's an opportunity for us to garner a lot of information from the industry about how people really feel about these topics. And hopefully the whole point of this is not to finish after 60 minutes of a discussion with answers. We're not going to have squared the circle on
these. We need more questions.
Exactly, yeah. But what I really want to achieve with it is opening up some of these discussions to make them more accessible to people. If people are quite perhaps dogmatic in their opinion, maybe they hear a lot of other opinions that give them a bit of perspective around their own. And maybe I think with all of this, all of these topics, there's no right or wrong answer. We just want to progress positively in the right way to keep getting better. So that's what I'm hoping the debate is going to help fuel us with, more information, the understanding more people's perspectives, and kind of being able to drive things forward in terms of that discussion.
What's your view, Jess? What are you looking forward to in terms of the debate? What should we be debating in this? What are the hot topics that really need a little bit of friction, a little bit of debate in your view?
Oh, I need friction in all areas in this field for so many reasons. And I think because it's really easy to water down the subject matter in ways that fit certain molds, whether that mold is organizational objectives or institutional beliefs. We like to use environmental issues to support the efforts that are already being done in the absence of critical discussion, which is what pushes innovation, creativity, and dialogue forward. So I'm looking forward to any conversation that can lead to critiques and can lead to potentially some disagreement on best practices or even just foundational starting points and what should the future look like. If there can be some discord there, I think that will really inspire the room more so than a direct or explicit effort to inspire. And on the research side, that's what creates science. It is the debate or differing perspectives and opinions that advance our fields and our study, which is exciting for me. I think gone are the days when we could really celebrate kind of a campfire kumbaya on how great things are. I think those days are gone. And I think at least in the last 12 months, we are really seeing a generational shift in expectations from the consumer standpoint, where climate action and environmental sustainability are really being demanded more by consumers, and sport consumers are really no different. They're not excluded from those expectations that we have of society and of the corporations that we are willing to fund with our time, energy, and resources. So if these conversations can illustrate that we really are at a, I will say kind of we're at a turning point in what the world can expect to see from leaders on climate action. If the debate can reflect that constant push forward, I will be pinned to paper the entire time, glued to my seat, probably needing a water break or a coffee break or something, but I have to push through because those are the things that really elevate conversation in the rooms. I'm hoping to come out of it with some really strong ideas to take what's being discussed or what's being considered and put it into practice in a way that can be studied. I would like to prove some of the things that come out of these conversations and ideas. I walked away from last year's summit with pages of ideas that are now materializing into opportunities for research that will continue to push the boundaries of what we know to be true in sport and in sports relationship with climate and the environment, which is really cool. Yeah. So I don't want anyone to sort of, you know, soft foot around the subject matters, because we, as people who are in positions to affect change, we need to be receptive of those thoughts. So an example, last year, a conversation sitting in the stands, kind of outside the networking area at the summit, a conversation came up about how sport organizations might be differently positioned to prioritize climate action based on what the organization deems as being valuable. And I'm pointing to myself as if I'm the organization. But I'm just using me as an example. I'm not the organization. But I guess that is a good illustration of what can be considered close to home. And a lot of the time, those organizational priorities that are decisions made at that close to home level reflect the values of the team or of the league. Sport teams that have different ownership structures might have different or varying degrees of priority on climate issues, among other social priorities like education, physical and mental health, all of these other things that really rise to the forefront when we talk about CSR and other things that highly visible sport organizations like to showcase that they're working on. They might mean something to the players. They might have community relations aspects, but some of those decisions might just simply boil down to who's in charge of making those decisions. And if the people in charge of making those decisions prioritize climate action or biodiversity or mitigating extreme weather risk, then we might see those emerge higher up in the organizational priorities. So that was something that came out of a just happened conversation at last year's summit and is turning into, it's an ongoing data collection right now, just to see what can come out of conversations with different sport teams on where their heads are in terms of org priorities. And we're hoping to see environment and climate emerge in some of those conversations.
Wow, that's really interesting. So that brings us to the end of part one for the show. Join us right after this. Okay, we're back for the second part of the show with Claire Paul and Jess Murphy. And we left it off the first part of the show talking a little bit about some of the things that could potentially be debated at this year's Sport Positive Summit. And I remember, Claire, last year, one of the really cool things I think really became really trademark of the summit was, you talked about it earlier, this whole concept of language. So carbon neutral, climate positive. And I felt before last year's conference, we hadn't really heard the debate about that, but there were two or three panels where we were talking about, can sport call itself carbon neutral? Can we use terms like climate positive? And it felt, since the summit, there's been lots of debate around what sport can and can't use. How do you feel that that conversation like that have evolved? And what do you feel could be the sort of, probably difficult to say now, a week before the summit, but could be like the landmark discussion point?
Oh, it's a great question. I think that the net zero topic is going to have moved on a lot since last year. I think the disruption of the carbon offsets landscape that we find ourselves in more broadly, the carbon removal coming in now to the fore more, the way we talk about it, knowing that the EU is going to ban the use of the word carbon neutral on products from 2026. You know, I mean, the dialogue around that whole landscape has changed. And also more broadly, because sport is so reliant on other sectors, how credible is it to call for net zero? And again, we've got some perspectives on that in the summit. I think it's going to be an ongoing discussion. I think it's still going to be up there because we have this push-pull between a target to net zero gives us a North Star to actually look towards to materially reduce our impact. So if we don't have that, we're then going back to organisations just understanding their footprint and reducing it in their own time, which is not palatable in the way things are evolving. But also we know that there's a lot of sports organisations where that scope three, those unavoidable emissions, those ones that they're reliant on, maybe fan travel or merchandise or other sectors, you can reduce that as far as possible, but you're never going to get rid of it entirely. So then what do we do? What do we do after that? And I think organisations are looking at engagement and education programmes, and should we be investing in that? We see a big difference to how that manifests if you're doing bi-weekly event versus annual tournaments, whether you're venue-based or whether you're a mass participation event. It's so broad. But I think that'll be a topic this year of like, what is our route forward with this stuff? We want to be credible. We want to have a target. But the way that market's changing so much and the language that we're still using around that, does that need to evolve as well? So I do think that's going to continue to be discussion. Much evolved from last year, but still very central. And what I'd like to see is more discussions, not just from a more global perspective, I think. So again, there's nothing we can do to get around the fact that the summit is naturally attended by a much higher level of participation in the global north. So we're based in the UK. The majority of people come from North America, Europe, the UK, with a much fewer number of people coming from places like Latin America, Asia, Africa. So it's by nature of the geography and the location, also resources, etc., and the way we think about sustainability a little bit differently, or quite differently as well as the urgency. So what we've tried to do this year is try and bring as more voices from the global south that we can into the programme, and where that's not been possible through people joining either from a resource or carbon footprint perspective, we're doing this global sport voices, which I acknowledge is nowhere near far enough, but again, trying to bring in more perspectives in a way that works for everyone in terms of time zones and perspectives. So we'll have this series of videos that'll be shown across the summit with people from places, you know, sports leaders from places like the Pacific Islands or Africa and Southeast Asia, talking about the climate impact of sport, where they're from and what they're seeing. So they're short videos that'll be across many of the sessions, which people will be able to watch. But again, I think for me, acknowledging it's nowhere near far enough, I'm hoping that will at least remind people and trigger people to get out of their own bubble a little bit, and that actually in different parts of the world, especially in the global south, people are interacting very, very differently with this topic than we are in the global north. And, you know, everything to do with climate change, the global movement. So that, I think, hopefully, I hope that will lead to more discussion. And I think there's opportunities there as well in terms of sport franchises and organizations connecting with sports organizations in different parts of the world to learn from each other and to support each other. I do hope we can be a bridge to that as well in some way. There'll be more global participants joining us virtually, again, through virtue of the fact that it doesn't make sense for people in Africa or Latin America to come over to London for a two-day meeting in force. But there'll be a lot of those participants online in our virtual summit. So I encourage people to connect with those as well and have those conversations. So I think that they're the kind of the bigger things. I do think as well, the risk that we've spoken about, I think that will come through more. And I think, as always, the role of athletes in terms of this, I think that never goes away in terms of the athletes being the voice of this. And to Jess's point earlier on about the human perspective, that really is how we all, and the media especially, like to connect on this issue through the human interest stories. And for the most part, that comes through athletes. So again, I think athletes speaking on the program and our athlete session, I think, will continue to be something we talk about a lot as well.
Yes. What's your view on that? Firstly, around the language part, which was a bit of a theme last year. And then also what you feel could be the sort of landmark. I mean, we discussed a few earlier, but what could be sort of landmark talking points this time around for us to kind of go away and think about for the next 12 months?
Yeah, on the language part, I think, I mean, Claire hit it spot on that if we end up in these, and of course the media will feed on this, but we end up in sort of these language battles of what's actually happening versus what's being preached versus what's being hoped for across the sport industry and a lot of the major events that get a lot of coverage and in turn have a lot of language associated with them between FIFA and Rugby World Cups and tennis majors, Super Bowls and All-Star Games and just massive sporting events that are, I think, for the most part, doing earnest efforts to incorporate environmental initiatives. Getting tripped up in the language can do more harm than good. Mm. And there's this push and pull between accuracy and ambition that I think causes some greenwashing to take place. And it's important to note, or at least to distinguish, that greenwashing can happen with or without intent. So even accidentally misleading or deceiving an audience can still be considered greenwashing. What's unfortunate is that if that and when that does happen, it draws a lot of negative publicity overall, even if it was purely an accident or a slip up of language. Mm. And that we see this all the time because risk management and other elements of sport business all sort of tie back to sport law, legal issues, things that are judicial, which so much of the foundations in that are to nitpick through the language. And it's easy to call out an organization over misuse of language. And then it's also easy to sort of overlay different terms to mean the same thing. And that happens when there's not a clear understanding on what the distinctions are. That happens frequently because this subject matter, environmental issues in sport, exploded as a hot topic. So many people are getting involved. The efforts are so holistic. They're growing. We're seeing them across the world at all levels of sport. And because it has just exploded in degree and in momentum, we end up in these word salads and jumbles of efforts and language because we're all trying to do, hopefully trying to do great things for the environment all at the same time. And the movement's happening really fast. At the same time, there are actually deceitful efforts that get woven into the earnest ones, which is really unfortunate. But that's because things like this are easy to capitalize upon and they're easy to take advantage of because they're so popular and because people actually care. There's a way to make money off of those things. So what's really important is to, and it might require sort of a pace change for our sport positive community to really think through word choice and word use and language definitions and mission statements and visions and values to ensure the correct language is being used. And that's not exclusive to terms like climate positive and carbon neutrality. It includes language related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Some of the ones that I distinguish all the time are related to ethnicity and gender and race and other socioeconomic terms, demographic terms that sort of get jumbled together because the efforts in those regards are happening so quickly too. And we really just need to slow down and be thoughtful and be careful about our word choice. You know, there's a difference between equity and inclusion and belonging. And there's differences between climate justice and environmental justice. And those things can go on and on. And we have to really be careful about that. So then I guess to the second point, what I would hope that we can all kind of pack back into our bags and walk away from the summit with, or at least think about on our way home, because I like to ponder. It's going to take me a while to reflect and collect my thoughts. As excited as I am, I'm going to need a minute before I have like a light bulb go off. So I'm hoping once I can sit back down and look back through my notes, I really hope that not only do we sort of emerge from the summit with refreshed energy, because I think we do need to acknowledge that this work is tiring physically and emotionally. So having the summit sort of marked on a calendar is a great way to recenter and come back after 12 months of bad news about climate to really be rejuvenated towards these collective efforts that we have. I'm hoping that happens, which I know it will because it happened last year. But then to push the boundaries or to push the envelope on that a little bit further, I'm also hoping that people walk away with connections that expand the reach beyond what's just happening at home. Because like Claire said, this is really an unparalleled opportunity to be in a space with so many like-minded people. And even if the geographic locations of people in the room are pretty concentrated, it will provide an opportunity to connect with new people. In our session, we're working hard to include global perspectives. If everyone meets one new person from a new place and speaks to them, there doesn't need to be an agenda. We don't have to have KPIs from those conversations. But if there's an opportunity to connect with someone that can broaden perspective outside of our home institutions or our home regions, I think that will push the 2024 summit into the direction that Claire mentioned at the very beginning of this, that we're really trying to move these efforts forward and create these global networks and empower voices that have historically not been heard. And for me, that's going to be my goal. I'm so excited to see everyone again, but I'm just as excited to meet new people as well.
I'm fascinated by this concept of conversations with KPIs. I don't think I've ever had a conversation with a KPI before. Maybe you can teach me how to do that when I see you, Jess.
No.
That was a nice way to sort of round up your kind of hopes and ambitions for the summit. Claire, maybe just to kind of finish off the conversation, you know, what if we just sit down this time next week, summit is over, obviously you need a bit of time to reflect on it, but what would you like to, you know, what would be a successful summit for 2023?
Yeah, for me, I think it's just, first of all, I'd love everyone to come with, if they can, a mind around opportunities and new connections, rather than like, this is, you know, which I get it. It's hard. This is really hard. I speak to sports organizations and rights holders all day, every day. And we know this is hard. It's difficult. It feels like there's a lot of pitfalls. It feels like there's a lot of things that you could do wrong. But also, I think to make sure people are getting out what they need to, I think we need to go into next week with, what are the opportunities? How can we connect with people to be more effective, more efficient, more innovative, more global, to have a sustainable business, to have a sustainable sport organization, to safeguard the future of our sport? So I think, I know in some conversations it's difficult to take a positive attitude towards what's going on, but I think if, I'd love everyone to walk away with like, yes, there's a lot of challenges there, but actually to Jess's point, I've spoken to some people and actually there's opportunities here. Maybe there's opportunities to work with new people, to develop new ideas or new projects. Maybe there's funding, maybe there's a new job. Like the whole point of why we work so hard year round to bring the summit together is really to, we want to provide the most streamlined way possible for people to get together and then do their thing. But it's really important to have that mindset, I think, rather than just, you know, like, oh, this is hard work. Try and think about opportunity. And to Jess's point, it is amazing to catch up and for us all be together, but make sure that you try and spend more time speaking to people you don't know than people you do know. Because that is the biggest trap of going to events. You haven't seen your pals in a while and you spend all your time chatting to them and then you think, oh no, I haven't spoken to anyone new. But I would say, just a logistical point, the app is open a week before and a week after. So if you did miss people, you can arrange online meetings for a week after to make sure you get those in and you try and meet as many people in the community as possible and make this stuff happen.
Is that your way of being polite about avoiding me next week?
Matt, we know each other. Come on, speak to new people. No, I'll be going around speaking to everyone. Don't you worry about that.
All right. Well, cool. That brings us to the end of our episode. Big thank you to Claire Port and Jess Murphy. Looking forward to seeing you guys next week and a load of our listeners hopefully there as well. I'm Matt Campelli. This has been the Sustainability Report podcast. Remember to click that subscribe button on the way out and I'll see you next time. Goodbye.